I'm going to email
that. Of information in there that you've never heard.
I'm very interested to read it.
So yeah, like we're starting
the
time with...
I ran for the Idaho State House of Representatives.
Wow.
And numerous other things that have happened in my life that I've never talked about.
Wow. That is so cool.
In 1 minute, we have to sit still for a while.
So, grandfather, when you ran for Idaho legislature, what party did you put yourself in?
Well, that's a good, interesting question. I was raised in a very, very, very strong Democratic home. My dad was a very strong Roosevelt Democrat. When I turned 21 and was old enough to vote, he took me to the side. He said, "Now, my son, you're old enough to vote, and I want you to know that the most dirty, most crooked, most criminal Democrat is better than the best Republican that ever lived."
Oh, my goodness.
That was what I was raised under. But then when I ran the House of Representatives, the man I was going to be running against had been in the House of Representatives for 8 straight sessions of the legislature. He was a Republican.
You can't eat or move around.
Nobody had run against him at all from the Democrats for the last 6 years.
What's going on?
One year, the Democrat got 2% of the vote, 3%. So I decided, even though I was a Democrat, I'd run against him in his own party as a Republican against a Republican.
That's a good idea.
Well, what happened was I got 47% of the votes. I missed it by 3%. But my dad wouldn't talk to me for 2 years because I ran instead of a Democrat. Today I vote, I'll just be plain honest with you, I vote almost a strong Democratic ticket today because of my 17 visits I've made to Washington, D.C. in testifying in the House and Senate subcommittee hearings, lobbying for support of Indian legislation. I never, never, never once was able to get a single Republican senator or member of the House to support me, my Indian legislation. On the other hand, I never, never once failed to get Democratic support. I won on many of my cases only because of Scoop Jackson and others in the Democratic Party who were in leadership. So you support those who support you. But I ran as a Republican that one time.
I also had my mom's family lived on the south side of Chicago.
Yeah.
And my grandfather was a ward boss for them. So yes. Mm-hmm. Democrats, right.
Rainbow.
Okay. I changed the wording to, does grandfather live near Winlock?
Yeah.
Okay, so I just put, instead of put 5 acres, I put on some acreage near Winlock, Washington. Okay, so I'm going to save this and send it to grandfather. I have grandfather's email as grandfather@unityofcentralia.net. Is that right?
Right, but that ends up coming to me.
Oh.
Which is good.
Which is good. And I'll take your email and blow it up big enough for him to read.
Okay.
Okay?
I'm sending it to you now.
Rainbow, I have a question for you.
Uh-huh.
Talk to me about the muting and unmuting on your computer again, because I'm going to ask Tom to help you with that.
Yeah, you need to mute me because I don't see a place on here for me to mute myself.
Okay.
But you can unmute yourself, correct? Is my voice coming across okay?
Marcia can hear you.
Marcia can hear me. Can everyone hear me? Wave your hand if you can hear Penny.
Yeah.
Okay.
I can hear you.
Oh, Alton can hear me.
Laura, I've got, Rainbow, I've got you up there. There you are. Now you're unmuted.
Yeah, I just unmuted myself.
Okay.
But I don't see how to mute myself. I can unmute myself. If you mute me, that's great.
Well, try clicking on the mute thing again, because it was unmuted. I mean, yeah, it was, no, I'm sorry, it was muted.
Okay, because Marcia said she could hear me. See, your microphone is unmuted, but my video is stopped too. I can't see anything. All right, now I can see my microphone is unmuted.
Right.
I don't know how to mute myself.
Just click on the same thing, on the microphone.
I don't, you mean a picture of a microphone?
I don't know what it looks like across the bottom of your screen. Because
now I have something on the bottom. It says, Penny. Yeah, oops, it now, see, it went away. Because it's got Penny's screen down at the bottom. When her screen wasn't there, oops, let me see. Catch.
I just sent that to you.
Thank you.
Okay, now I'm muted.
You are.
Am I muted now?
No.
I hit mute.
Okay. Well. Hold it, you may have. You did it. It is muted. Rainbow.
Well, how are you, Marcia?
Hi, I can't see anyone, but yes, hello.
Oh, you can't see anyone?
All I see is Legends and Lessons, the screen.
Yeah, I have the screen share on. Let me take that off so we can get our P's and Q's going here.
There we go.
Okay. What's the house for?
That is a picture of the church. That's Tom's extra computer.
Ow.
He puts that picture on there.
I just did a angle.
Cindy?
Ma'am?
These are all the people who can see it.
Probably
right
just
now.
Once.
There's Dorothy,
I'd be very interested,
Marcia,
in what you said about Roy and the tribe.
Sir, so, say that again. I'm sorry.
All the people that are going to be in.
I said it's in a. If it's a short biography, it's probably one sentence. But I'm very interested.
Yeah. Tom told me about that. I edited it. I'm just want the figures because I had 40 acres. I wasn't sure how many acres. And 3,000 books. So I just wanted the fact check. But I did take that last sentence out of there.
You know, Cindy. If you, I think probably better than me, I think Marcia would be the one to do the editing of that.
Oh, really?
She, yeah, Marcia's been, what, everything at the College Tribe for a while.
Oh, okay. Well,
yeah.
I've known her since 1975.
A couple years. Okay.
Yeah.
Then I'm going to just.
70, in 1975, Tom is just about to graduate from high school. So, yeah, a little way.
Yeah, me too. Okay, Marcia. So, what is your email then here?
All right. These are just all letters. It's okay. mjwms@centurytel, which is centurytel1l.net.
Okay, I'm just forwarding this to you.
All right.
I sent it to Tom, but I'm just going to forward it to you as an attachment.
Cynthia Rose, I see you.
There you go. Boom. Okay.
Great.
I just wanted a short, kind of a short bio to keep, like Tom said, to you know, keep the interest of the Library of Congress. Because I don't want to drop it. She emailed me back fairly quickly for the videos to so we can archive the videos from these legends and lessons in the Library of Congress. So,
you know, I think this looks fine.
The figures are okay now.
Okay. Oh, there she's got on. I was just waiting for someone to join us, and it looks like she got on.
Yes,
I'm going to go, Marcia. Then I'm going to go ahead and send this to her. Is that okay? Marcia, can I go ahead and send this to her then?
I'll be reading it one more time.
Okay. I just want to make sure the figures are right.
The third line from the bottom, I'm being an English teacher here. Longhouse would not be capitalized.
Okay.
Okay. Okay. I think we are ready to start. Does everybody feel ready?
Ready.
Okay. Welcome, Klahauya.
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 Cindy, help me out here if I get this wrong. Akopsan Mox Cinemox. How did I do there?
Did I write it? I don't know if I wrote it down.
Well, what's that, Marcia?
Say it one more time.
A Mox Cinemox.
Repeat.
Mox Totlam.
Mox Totlam. Yeah.
P Cinemox.
Oh,
no,
there we go.
Stoken. It was Stoken, wasn't it? Because we're 28.
There we go.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay. Nisaika de Le Kwan Masaika Yakwa. Nisaika Tikeg Okok Mitlai Kopa Mamuk Wawa. What do we say to that? Masi Masi, huh? Go ahead.
Masi Masi.
Yep. Alton says Masi Masi. And what we said there is today is the 28th session of Legends and Lessons, and we are very glad you're here. We like to come to this place to speak Chinook Wawa. Thank you for coming here. With this podcast, we're playing a part in preserving the stories and the language of the Chinook people. And what do we say to that? Masi-masi?
Masi-masi.
Masi-masi, that's right. Tonight, we have a very important guest. I would like you to meet Alton.
Hi.
Alton, hi. I have a question for you.
Hi.
Look at the camera. Have you ever wondered what it was like to grow up in an early Chinook tribe as a native boy?
No, but I wonder.
Oh, but you wonder. Well, these children lived a very different life than we live today. The Chinook lived in the area at the mouth of the Columbia River, the present-day border of Washington and Oregon. And the river was important in all aspects of hunting and trading. Like other Northwest tribes, the Chinook carved wonderful canoes from huge trees. Young children and babies spent all of their time close to their mothers, and the mother would go about her daily work, carrying the baby on her back in a cradle board, sort of like a modern day backpack. The Chinook people were great traders. They traveled the rivers and they traded with other villages. They bartered fish, furs, and cedar and carvings. Sit still, you're making me seasick.
You're talking about sea.
That's right. From this, as we know, evolved the special trading language of the Chinook jargon, was used throughout the Pacific Northwest, and it was a combination of English, French, and native languages. It was successful and useful in trading with different people. Now, children were generally treated as special in many tribes. and had ceremonies they performed on newborns. Naming a baby was an important process, and a birth name used in everyday conversation. People referred to each other either by their relationship or by their nickname. And get this, boys were often given a nickname that described the characteristic of that boy. What do you think yours would be?
Goofy.
Goofy. I think your name would have been had something to do with being curious and being smart.
No, Goofy.
Goofy. No. But we'll go with Goofy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So the lineup for tonight. We'll begin with a legend by Grandfather Roy Wilson. And then Grandfather will share an artifact from his Native American Museum. And as always, we'll take time for some questions and comments, and then we'll dive into our very popular lesson in Chinook jargon. We have an announcement to make when we get to the language portion of our show. And with that, Klahaya Chop, welcome, Grandfather. I'm excited to see what you have tonight.
I just want to say we have a new person on tonight, Stacy Millett. Hello to Stacy.
Hello, Stacy.
Not sure who that is, but hello. Welcome.
Hello, wherever you are, because I can't see you.
Who is Stacy Millett?
Oh, there she is.
Who is Stacy Millett?
My mom.
Yep, that's Alton's mom.
Oh, very nice. Hi, Mom.
Okay, I have two legends to tell tonight. First is a legend that I had planned on telling, an Apache legend. And then Penny called and said that she had this young fellow on her lap, 6 years of age. Could I tell a boy's story? So I said, yes. This is a story that I already told this group back along one of the first few lessons that we had out of these 28. Some of you were here then, some of you weren't. Those who did hear it, bear with me. I'm sure that you'll get something out of it for yourself, even though you hear it a second time. I'm telling it for that young man that sits on Penny's lap. It's titled The Horse Race. It's a countless legend. Once in the long ago time, there was a little boy. He was about 8 years of age. He lived alone with his grandma. All he had was grandma, and all grandma had was him. She was very careful in taking care of him, but she wanted him to grow up and be a good, strong man, a good hunter. And so she made a little small set of bow and arrows that would be fit that 8-year-old boy. And he could go out and hunt for small game like rabbits and squirrels. She would tell him, don't go very far away from the house. Stay close. We don't want the mad woman of the woods to capture you. And so he was hunting every day, learning how to use his bow with arrows. And then one day he saw an animal that he had never seen before. It was a tiny animal. Oh, it was much larger than a rabbit or a squirrel, but very, very tiny for what it usually would be. And he thought, I don't want to shoot that, but I'm supposed to learn how to use my bow and arrows. So he strung the arrow into his bow and let it fly. And he missed that little animal. Oh, he was so glad he missed it. But I'm not supposed to be this bad. That's bigger than a rabbit or a squirrel by a whole lot, and I should have been able to hit it. Well, after he shot several arrows and missed every one, he finally Dad, I just don't want to kill that animal. He walked up to it, and he petted it, and the animal said to him, why don't you climb on me and ride me? Oh, he climbed on the back of that little animal, and his feet were only about 2 inches off the ground. That's how little that animal was. Well, he rode around and he rode back to the lodge, and Grandma saw him coming on that animal. She screamed out of fear and fright because she had never seen a horse before. And anytime you'd see something that you'd never seen before, that was considered to be a dangerous spirit being. And she said, get down off of that. Take that thing back and get rid of it. Put it back where you got it. Oh, but Grandma, it's so cute. Can't I keep it, huh? her grand so much that she finally gave in. So every day he rode it. Every day he groomed it. Grandma helped him find grass for that little horse until he got to where they were flying as fast as the wind. Well, Grandma had never seen a horse, but she had heard about a chief in a neighboring village that had race horses and said, this is what this is. This is a horse. And so one day the little horse said to the little boy, grandson, take me to that chief's and race me against his race horses and I'll win for you. Well, Grandma went and found to the village and found the chief and says, my grandson has a horse and wants to race his horse against yours. The chief laughed and okay, you bring your horse. But after Grandma left, bring your horse tomorrow. We'll race tomorrow morning. She left and the chief, he turned to his right-hand man sitting next to him. He laughed and said, they don't have a horse. You can tell by the way she's dressed. She's a very, very poor person, and poor people can't afford horses. But the next day, Grandma, grandson, and the little tiny, tiny horse showed up to race. Well, the old chief, he looked at her grandson and said, now, you know that when you race, the winner of the race wins the other person's horse, and you have to have one other thing to bet with your horse. And I'll bet a slave with my horse against you. What are you going to bet with your horse? And grandson said, I don't have anything else except Grandma. Oh, my. Grandma would... they thought, oh, I hope I don't lose. He doesn't lose. Well, the chief, he had but five.
His buddy
said to him, you can race the poor horse you got and run circles around that little tiny thing. But the little horse won. And so grandson and grandma didn't have to stay. She could go home with her grandson. And her grandson now had two horses and a slave. Well, that night, the chief sent a messenger. I want you to come and race again tomorrow. In order that we have time to all this now, I'm going to make this real short. You know what happened? Day after day, the little horse won. Until now, there was only one horse left. And that was the chief's fastest horse. That horse had never ever lost a single race to any horse, but the little horse won. So now the little boy had six horses and five slaves. He was being considered a very, very wealthy young man. The chief sent the messenger back once again and said, you are destined to be a better chief than me. Won't you and Grandma come and become a part of our family and live in our longhouse and bring my horses back to me. And so it was. And what is the lesson that we learn from that legend? And I'm telling all this for that little boy that's sitting on Penny's lap. Yeah, he's just now at the age of ready to begin going to school. And if he can hear what I am saying, hey. And what I'm also saying to all of you and to myself, to all of us, is you are the legend and the legend is you. You are the little boy. I am the little boy. What is the horse? The horse are our gifts and our talents. Oh, but my gifts, I'm not gifted in any way. I can't lead a group like Penny or Tom or some of the others. I can't play the piano like Joyce. I can't do this. I can't do that. I can't do anything. Oh, but you do have talents. We all have them. They're just little tiny, tiny, tiny talents. But if you ride them every day and you groom them every day, then you can be a success. To that boy on your lap, if he's going through school, when you find out that you're real good at math or good in the sciences or good in art, and you may be saying right now, I can't do any of that. I'm just a little tiny, tiny horse. But you groom it and ride it. You work with it every day and you can become the best in the world. You can be from the chief. You can win all the races in life. And so it is with that one. I've kind of cut that legend real short, but I wanted him to have the whole story of the horse race. Okay. Now for our legend of the evening from the White Mountain. Oh, close. good. The legend from the White Mountain Apache tribe on how ceremonies, healing ceremonies, first began. So when the Creator first created human beings, two-legged, created the Apache and placed them on the place of the earth, and they loved the place they were in. Everybody was happy. Everything went well until, after a period of time, two men became very ill, very sick, and they had never had sickness before, so they didn't know what to do. The people gathered around, and then the Creator drew a man from the east, a man from the south, a man from the west, man from the north, and the man from the east began to pray a prayer in words. And when he finished, the man from the south picked up his drum and began to sing a chant, a healing chant. Then following that came the man from the west praying a prayer in words. And following that, then the man from the north with his drum sang a song, a chant, a healing chant, and the two sick men became well. And so the first healing ceremony took place. From then on, they knew how to deal with sickness, with healing ceremonies. What I find is interesting in this story is that it was the Creator as they're speaking through them. And according to the fullness of the story, if I just took a whole lot of it to tell you, that they didn't know what they were saying except as they heard it. It was like they were a part of the audience instead of the speaker. They were hearing them singing the chants that they had never heard before, praying prayers that they had never heard before. And so it is today, whether it's a Christian ceremony, an Indian ceremony, or whatever. It's the spirit of God, or in our Indian world, our Tamanawas, our medicine spirit, singing through us, praying through us. And God is no respecter of persons. It doesn't matter who you are. You could be the person listening to me right now that feels you're the least spiritual of everybody in this group tonight. But the spirit of God can sing and chant through you. Pray through you. Healing ceremonies many times can come from just praying a prayer in words. How many times I've just prayed prayers like that, healing take place. Other times it can come through music and singing, chanting. Take David, the shepherd boy who later became the king of the Jews. When he was just a boy, King Saul threw his tantrums and all and went into a real bad negativity. David would start playing his harp and there would be healing. I've told you before in the Central Unity Church about the time a few years ago that a woman in a group, medicine wheel group that I was teaching in the church in Tacoma, end up in the hospital. They were going to have to amputate both of her feet the next day. And on the way to the hospital, that my Tomatoes, my spirit said, take your flute. Oh, I never used a flute in a ceremony before. I always use my eagle feather or whatever. Take your flute. I end up taking the flute. And take the time to tell the whole story was, she still had those 2 feet. They never were amputated. And there's a whole lot more to that story. Medicine people in the Indian world, there are two different kinds of medicine people. There are the herbal medicine women, usually always the women, because they were the ones that worked with the herbs and men didn't. And then the spirit medicine people who work in the spirit world. I know a little bit about herbs as I teach what I know from the medicine wheel, but I would never even try to call myself an herbal medicine person because I know just enough to really get into trouble. But I work in the spirit world. And in the spirit world, these are both men and women, but mostly usually men. The spirit is as the from the teachings of the four men in the legend, one from the east, one from the south, one from the west, one from the north. And each had different medicine powers. The two that were praying prayers prayed different prayers. The two that were singing chants sang different chants. And as I have met many other medicine men throughout the United States and tribes, talked with them and shared with them, the Creator gives each of us our own particular medicine healing ceremonies. And so they're all very different, as from the south, the east, the west, the north. But now and then you get a surprise. I had that here a few years ago. I went to Nisqually. I had purposely made arrangements to meet with a Nisqually medicine man. I just wanted to talk to him and share with him. And while we were sharing, and it was during a Nisqually tribal event, we were off to the side. A young woman came up to him and happened to be his niece, one of his nieces. Uncle, I'm very sick. Can you pray for me? And all of a sudden, I was in awe as I saw a ceremony that, as far as I was concerned, was personally just my own healing ceremony. One that I had done many times, but never knew of anybody else ever doing. And he was doing the very same ceremony, exactly right down to the very fraction of a second of the ceremony. But the Creator can work through you, even as he did through any one of those four young men. So much for healing ceremonies. There's a whole lot more we could say, but I will share with you my artifact for today. And can you see this wedding vase?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. You'll notice that it has two spouts. This wedding vase is from the Southwest, the Navajo and Apache and all those other Southwestern tribes. They will work in pottery. Our tribes up here make their utensils out of baskets, usually cedar baskets. But this is from the Southwest. And the wedding ceremony, as compared with the Christian ceremony, in a Christian ceremony in the old days, the preacher in the ceremony might say, now you twain will become one flesh, or the two of you becoming one flesh. Then we found that later that the ceremonies began to change a little. Same thing with a Christian ceremony. There would be the candelabra, two candelabras, one on the left and one on the right, one for the bride, one for the groom. And then there would be a unity candle, one candle set off by itself. And in the ceremony, it comes to that place where the bride would take one candle off of her candelabra, the groom would take one off of his. Together, they'd bring their flames of their two candles together and light the unity candle. Then they blow out the ones in their hand and put them back in the candelabra. Now the two have become one. In the Indian world, the same thing took place with the wedding vase. Many times I've done Indian weddings with the wedding vase. It's filled with water. when it comes to that part in the ceremony where we're declaring you two are becoming one, I would take this wedding vase and I would tip one spout to the groom and one spout to the bride. To be able to get both their mouths on those spouts, they are cheek to cheek, and they both drink the same water at the same time. Now the two have become one. And so the Indian wedding vase. Okay, open for questions and comments on either the two legends or the wedding vase.
We have somebody else new here today too. It's Craig Collins Young in the middle there. The handsome, scruffy looking guy in the middle. He's my daughter's boyfriend. Is that what you are, Craig?
Glad to meet you. Glad to meet you, Craig.
He's in Maryland.
Thanks. Yeah, excellent. I guess that's a fair description.
Grandfather, I do have a question.
Yes.
How are medicine people chosen within a tribe? How are they identified?
In the spirit world, they are not chosen by the tribe. They are chosen by the Great Spirit. It's all a very spiritual thing. It's much like people in the ministry. The church may call a minister to be their pastor, but they haven't called him into the ministry. You're called by the Spirit of God. But the herbal medicine women, basically, it's much like, let's say, weaving the baskets. You want a beautiful basket, you're going to go to the one who makes the most beautiful baskets, the kind of baskets you want. And so it was today. If you move to a new community and you want a family doctor, you're going to find the one you feel is the best for you, and that's the one you're going to go to. If you're going to go to the grocery market, you're going to go to the one where you feel you can get the best buys and buy the best quality food.
Mm-hmm.
So the Indian world, when it came to herbal medicine, which one of these women that gathers herbs for medicine is the best? The one that is the best. And you don't vote or choose, but you just find the one's the best, and that's the one you follow, and everybody else starts following that same one. And so it's the thing by grooming and riding your horse. That woman groomed her horse, her talent for gathering herbs, for medicines, and did the better job than anybody else, and that's the one that's going to be the best one for me for my healing.
Gotcha. So
it's a human thing on the herbs, but in the spirit medicine people, once again, you're going to go to the spirit medicine person that seems to have the more success than anybody else. If you had several spirit medicine men in your tribe or in your village, which one seems to always have the greatest success? You're going to go to that one. So that's basically the way they are chosen, not so much by any other reason than who's the one that's going to be the best for me.
As their talents emerge. Very good. Thank you. Thank you very much. Do we have any other questions? Go ahead, Marcia.
I would add something to that on the medicine woman. Be very often that those talents are passed down from mother to daughter. So yes, it can, by exposure, you know, if your mom is doing a lot of herbal work with herbs and remedies and stuff as a little girl, you might just naturally pick that up. But not every daughter in a family is going to pick that up. So it's just like following an avocation in any world. If you're really interested in it and want to study and learn more and network with other people. Right now in our Cowlitz tribe, the woman who's doing the most teaching about herbs and that kind of medicine, it's obvious that she's studied a lot, but she has a natural talent for it. And I don't know if she learned it from her mom or not. I haven't heard that, but she has studied with a lot of other people. She just soaks the information in, mm-hmm. and then she's passing it along to the rest of us, because okay. it's her talent to pass along.
Her talent, her calling, her passion, all of those things. Excellent. Thank you, uh-huh. Marcia. Thank you so much.
Marcia, I have something I would like to say. Thank you, Marcia. That was just right on. And so it was both with the boys and the girls. The women would teach the girls their now to make baskets, to do the gather the herbs. But the girl, the daughter of all the women, the one who groomed her horse and rode it the most, became one of the future grown-up women that was the best of the herbal medicine women.
Good.
This is Rainbow. I'd like to say something.
Yes, Rainbow.
Okay. I'm on my computer because my tablet battery went out. But anyway, that story that Grandfather told about taking the flute to the hospital when... Mm-hmm. You know, normally he didn't. Mm-hmm. That is like my favorite story of his. I know that lady. Her name is Silvertongue.
Yes.
And there is a reason he was asked to bring that flute. When he played that flute, the music didn't stay just in that room. It went down the hall. And when mm-hmm. Silvertongue was released from the hospital, because the next day the doctors are all ready to amputate, and it's like, her feet, they're well, you know, can't believe it. Well, this man came down the hallway, and he said that his father had been dying, and he was told that if they wanted to see their father alive again, they had to be there. Well, the music went from Silvertongue's room down to that room, and that man was healed also and went home. And mm-hmm. he was on his deathbed. And so, you know, the spirit works in mysterious ways, and there's that ripple effect, that healing, you know, it had unexpected consequences.
Yes.
And I love that story.
Excellent. Thank you, Rainbow. Thank you for your contribution there.
Rainbow.
Any last minute questions? Anything anybody wants to know before we move on? Okay. I'm thinking it's time to go on to...
I would like to...
Go ahead, Tom.
Plug here. For one, our chat boxes. Because if you go down into the chat box, there's a link to a newly created gallery of pictures of the museum.
Oh, nice.
If you go to page 5 of it, you can see pictures of the wedding vase.
Okay. Thank you, Tom.
Oh, thank yep. you.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Penny?
Hey, yes, Grandfather.
Before we turn to Marcia and Rainbow, I want to ask Marcia, ask Rainbow a favor.
Absolutely.
Rainbow?
Yeah? I can hear you.
You could contact Dwayne Pascoe and see if you get him to join this group on Zoom on one of the events, and you could act as the interviewer interviewing him, and spend the whole evening with these people in our group here enjoying Dwayne Pascoe. Wouldn't that be a great evening?
Yeah, it would be.
So great idea.
You have his number and you talk to him now and then, so I'll leave it to you to try and reach him and see if you can arrange that. I think it'd be great. This people in our Wall group would love Dwayne Pascoe.
Mm-hmm.
Hey.
Okay, it's yours.
Thank you, grandfather. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Marcia. Thank you, Tom. So, as we have said, there are not many Chinook speakers, but we have two of the most special right here in our room tonight, and they're in our room every time. Rainbow and Marcia have, I believe, something special prepared for us. Before that, I want to say that they have been teaching for 28 lessons now. And I just want to thank you and tell you what a wonderful job you've been doing. And next week, we get to do an interview with Rainbow during this time. We will get to know how she came to know grandfather, how she came to love the language and the history and become involved. So, and we get to know a little bit about our teacher herself. And then following week, we will do the same thing with Marcia. And I'm really, really excited for you and for me to get to know a little bit more about these people who have been giving their time to teach us for 28 hours, basically. We have been here 28 hours. So with that, I'm going to welcome Rainbow, welcome Marcia, and I'm going to turn the room over to you.
Okay, well, Laura did the wonderful task of preparing a dialogue for us again today. And
which
so
I
we'll
lost.
Do like we did last. You lost? You're going to have to wing it, Laura.
Do you need a minute to find it?
Yes.
I think we can talk Marcia into chatting about Chinook jargon while you find your dialogue.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Marcia.
We'll do like we did on Tuesday. Laura and I will go through it, and then we'll want to hear if you caught the gist of what we were talking about, and tell us what new words you heard us saying, and we'll talk about those words. And I really liked Dorothy's idea last time that after we've kind of figured out what the words mean, then we can go through it again, and your ears can pick up better what we're saying. And then if there's any time left, you know, I think it's fun to talk about how you might want to modify any of these sentences to say something a little different or ask a different question, whatever we come up with. But anyway, we'll do that method again right here tonight. Okay.
Perfect timing.
So, Penny, does Craig have any background about this at all?
I think Craig does. He knows Cindy quite well. Wave your hand, Craig, if you have some background as to what we're doing. But he does, Maso Minos, but he has a connection to find it too. Yes.
I found it.
Oh, good, okay. All right, so we'll start. Klahaya Laura. Micah Tikeg Okok Wong Laley.
Aha. Keshi Halo Kope Polakli.
Nike Kamtux. Musam Kul Kansi Delate Wong.
Nike Musam Klosh Kansi Tennis Coal Peace Knots.
Ah, Nika Elip Mitlite Copa Eastern Washington Polakli Delayed Warm Yakwa. And that's our talk for tonight. What are we talking about?
Night.
Too hot to sleep.
Good job, Dorothy. Dorothy, help me out. help me out and tell me what they just said to us.
So Marcia, see if I remember this. Marcia asked how Laura is doing, or how she likes the warm weather.
Right.
And Rainbow said that she liked it, but she didn't like the warm nights.
Mm-hmm.
Because she couldn't sleep. And so Marcia says, I know. And then she said that it's really warm in Eastern Washington.
Because that's where I was born.
Okay.
And I said, Nike Musum Cloche, Kunsi Tennis Cole Peace Nos.
So you sleep better when it's a little cooler and raining.
Right. You are doggone good, Dorothy. I am so proud of you.
Nice job, Dorothy.
I am in awe. That was a fantastic understanding of what was said. You are fantastic.
Awesome.
Good I've been learning with these guys for years, so they're probably going, that's as good as you can do.
Oh, that's fabulous. You're fabulous.
I know. I got to represent how good teachers they are. See?
So what new words did people hear in this dialogue?
Musum.
Musum, okay. And what does musum mean? What do you think that means?
Night. I mean, sleep.
Sleep. Sleep. Good job. Okay. Uh-huh. What other new words?
Schnoz.
Say that word again. Schnoz.
Schnoz. S-N-A-S-S.
Schnoz. Okay.
Schnaz. Schnaz. Schnoz.
It sounds icky.
I think there was an and before that word. I didn't quite catch it.
Yes. Kunsi. Kunsi's when. Tennis call.
Oh.
What's tennis call?
Oh.
Tennis.
Little.
Mm-hmm. Little, yeah.
Cole.
It's the same in English, just about.
Cold.
Cold.
Yeah, tennis okay. Cold.
Little cold.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Oh, okay.
When it's cool, P,
stop. And not.
Nos.
That's a new word.
Yes.
Spell that one for me again.
S-N-A-S-S. It's a new word.
S-N-A-S. Okay. Tennis Nos. Thank you.
Cindy, what do you think Nos is?
I just looked it up. It means rain.
Yeah, rain.
Good job, Cindy.
Yeah, yeah. So another word in there was call, K-U-L-L.
K-U-L-L.
Mm-hmm. And it said it was, it's Musum call, Kunsi delayed wom. And so Musum is sleep and call. Got any idea?
Mm-mm.
Hard or difficult?
Oh, okay.
it's hard or difficult to sleep when it's too warm. Okay. All right. And then the word warm. That's a
kind of like coal. It's very similar to the warm. English.
Warm. Then.
They're opposites, warm and coal. So what's warm?
Warm.
Warm.
Mm-hmm. Warm. Mm-hmm. Warm and cool. Warm and cool. Okay.
So there was new words.
There was one other new word. Keshi.
Oh yeah.
Did you use Keshi, Laura?
Yeah, Keshi. I have. Keshi is one that you're not going to get. That means but. And how many times do we use the word but in our language, you know? I really like that, but it's not the right color for me.
Oh, you told us that before, didn't you?
Very useful word.
We haven't used it as part of, we may have mentioned it, but we haven't actually incorporated it into our word list until today.
Yeah.
Very useful.
And you gave us.
So I've updated the word list, and I'm going to be sending that to Marcia for her to do her magic with. And one thing that I had thought was these little conversations that Marcia and I have had. I was thinking about adding those. So because what I do is I'll put the English on top. And then the Chinook jargon word underneath it.
Mm-hmm.
So you can see what we said and, you know, like practice that dialogue yourself. We've done two conversations, the one last week about my sister and the one this week about the warm weather. Is that something that you would like to see?
Yes. Yes. Okay. That's very helpful. Very, very helpful. And I think this is a good time to do the plug. Tom, are you in the house?
I am.
Okay, could you talk about where you can find this word list?
This word list is on the site of unityofcentralia.net. If you go down to the bottom right corner of the homepage, you will see grandfather's legends and language, listing of audio and video presentations.
Thank
and
you.
And if you click on any of those, at the bottom of the page that shows up will be the currently the July 12th version of the Chinook jargon words and phrases.
Excellent. Thank you.
I will also put it into the chat box right now.
Excellent.
So if you click
and on. And I've already updated the new list. So all I have to do is send it to Marcia to have her look at it.
Okay.
And then she can send it on to you. I can send you the long list if you want, but Marcia has the magic way of condensing it so it's not 14 pages long.
Why don't we go through Marcia and then through Tom, and then we all know where to go and grab it. So it'll be one source. Awesome. Thank you so much for that. Okay. Do we have more language lesson tonight? It is, I think grandfather's gone to the Wheel of Fortune. It is 5 minutes till. Do we have a little more practice you wanna do?
Danny has her hand up.
Yeah,
Danny.
I'm just wondering, is that chat box available without having this lesson? Open without having Zoom open?
No.
I have both on my screen at the moment. I have the chat box and all of you.
It's right, only available during the session that you're in, Danny.
Okay.
Yeah.
However, one of the things that will happen is that at the end of the session, when Zoom closes, you in my computers, it pops up a little box that says chat log or whatever it is. Also, if you go to the Zoom folders on your computer, there'll be one for each of the sessions, and inside that folder is a copy of the chats that you participated in.
Mossy Tom.
My
Tom, will your pictures be available on Unity site also?
Well, all of the grandfather media is hosted at Unity.
Take a bite. Come on over here.
So on the bottom, if you go to the site now.
Wow, yep. In just a minute.
On the bottom of today's LNL, there'll be a link at the bottom of that page for the gallery.
Okay.
That what you were asking?
Yes.
Okay.
Excellent. Excellent. Right. So are we ready to close? Any last minute burning desires, things you want to share? Okay. Always, everyone knows, we welcome your participation. And remember, there are no mistakes in this class. Thank you, Grandfather, Rainbow, Marcia, Tom. Thank you for joining us, Mrs. Craig. Thank you, Danny. Anybody I missed there, I'm glad you were a part of our storytelling hour. And I'm grateful to everyone, our teachers, our learners. I'm grateful to Alton for going on this journey with us. What do you say? How do you say goodbye?
Klahalia.
Klahalia.
Yeah.
Good job. Good job.
And at this time, we're going to close the recording and open the room for practice and conversations. But I
do want to say, as always, we all have a story within us. We all have a song yet unsung. It's time for you to tell your story. Klahalia, and thank you.
Klahalia. Masi.
Masi.
No.
You sound like a young Chewbacca there.
With that, I think I'm going to sign off because my young friend here is really wanting to go on a bike ride.
All right.
I think he's sat as long as he's able. Thank you.
You did a great job.
You did great.
Oh, yeah.
I'm standing for a demo going on.
All right. Bye-bye.
I'm standing for
bye.